You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan of the Sunday Independent, and my guest is Alison Spittle. Alison, Merry Christmas, and thanks so much for coming in.
Merry Christmas. Thank you very much for having me.
So are you spending Christmas in London?
No, I'm spending it in Westmead. Yeah. So my parents are divorced, so each year I get to choose, and this year I'm picking Westmead.
Yeah.
We're going to do a bit of volunteering this year, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because I can't be going to Mass, and I can't be walking.
Why can't you go to Mass?
Same as walking, not arsed, yeah. You know.
But was it true when you were, like, obviously you're born in London.
Yes.
There's a bit of Germany, and then you ended up in Westmead.
That's true,
you
yes.
were called, because you had an English accent, you were called Protestant.
Yeah. And
did that stop when you made your communion, presumably?
Oh, that's the, yeah, well, this is a, yeah, that's the joke. So, yeah, I had an English accent. I also...
Do a bit of an English accent there for me.
Now?
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's about it. I can impersonate my dad. Like, my dad is so English that even I feel colonised by him. Do you know that type of way?
Yeah.
He's fierce English. And when I was a kid, people used to sing rebel songs to me, and I took that as a personal affront. But then I read a history book, and then I was like, ah, fair play. Go on. Yeah. You're dead right. So,
yeah. And what do you do when someone sings a rebel song to you?
Oh, I love it now. I clap along. They're yeah. absolute tunes as yeah. well, aren't they? You have to give it to them. Like, rebel songs, there's some tune to them.
And did you suffer from displacement anxiety growing up, like, born in London, Germany, then Westmead? In Westmead, they taught you English. And
yeah, well, I was English. Do you know, like, I was born in England, and the culture, like, my family are builders, so we just go wherever the work is. And displacement, I mean... Yes, this placement was good though, because I don't think I would be a comedian if yeah. if I didn't move around so much, because you have to have a new identity. Each new school is a fresh start, so I would just go through different identities. So I'd be a clever person, then a rebel, and then I just thought I'd be funny.
And well, what did you mean when you said that you feel safe when you're on stage, because it's the only time you're in control?
Yeah, because it is.
Yeah.
It is the only time I'm in
so
control.
So where does that come from then?
The feeling of control, or
of when you're in control when you're on stage, but so when you're not on stage, you don't feel in control.
No, do you?
I suppose no.
Now that
I think of it,
yeah, absolutely. I've no control over anything, but like when you're on stage.
But does it come from something in your childhood?
Not being in control.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be able to point out an exact point. Do you yeah, know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like Yeah, I suppose, like, you know, as a child, you're never in control of anything. I was never in control of where I was going to live, you know, and like no child is. No child should have that amount of control either. Like, yeah.
And what did you think you inherited from your mother? Remember you said something like that you've surrounded by funny women, your mother, your granny, your sister. Was it a funny household?
Yeah, very funny. I think I inherited my sense of humour from my mum. And also my insatiable need for people to like me.
But everyone has that, don't they?
Insatiable need for people to like them. I'm getting it less and less.
Because people don't like you or
yeah.
the need for it?
Do you know what it is? It's like having a fear of death. And you know that, like, when you're younger, you can't accept that you're going to die or that your loved ones are going to die. Then more loved ones die and then you accept it.
Yeah.
And like when I was younger, I couldn't accept that people might not like me. But then, like, you know, when you do comedy, less and less people are like you. So it's grand. Yeah, it's not going to kill me.
But that doesn't, you seem to be becoming more and more popular. I don't see how you're becoming less and less. Less and less people are liking you.
Oh yeah, I know that. But like, not everyone is going to like me. And I'd say, like, as well, being fat as well is kind of like you're a reflection of people's feelings about themselves. So not a lot of a majority of the people who would go out their way to tell me they don't like me are normally middle-aged men. So
they sound like psychos, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, for sure. Look,
but like, who would go out of their way to tell anyone they don't like? Isn't that just a mirror of, you know, if I say something negative about you, it's nothing about you, it's just all about me.
Absolutely. And when I was like and it's not where I'm going, like, everyone who doesn't like me is sad. They're not. They're perfectly entitled to their opinion. But the people who go out their way to tell me, do you know what's really sad is, like, one fella, I was on, like, was it a Ray Darcy show or something? And I made a joke about potatoes. And this fella, like, tweeted at me and said, like, oh, you should lay off the potatoes, which is grand, like, but he had a daughter that was probably the same size I was when I was her age. So I just felt really bad for his daughter, because, like, if he's making jokes, I just hope he doesn't make those jokes in front of his kid.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing like, you know. It's
but whatever. Your weight or my weight or anyone's weight is nobody else's business.
I know. That's it. But sure, look.
And did it bother you at school or when you were younger? Or?
Yeah, like, I didn't get bullied over being fat now. I would have got bullied more over being English.
Yeah.
I could control.
Can you say fat anymore? God almighty.
Oh, yeah, I call myself fat. Yeah. I identify as fat. It's grand. It's like...
Didn't you have also an incident when you were... Well, you were 20 and there was some, don't mention his name.
Okay.
Some 50-year-old comedian.
Oh, yeah, that fella. Yeah. But he was mad after me after.
Well, he called you fat, didn't he?
He did. And then he tried to seduce me later on. So good luck to him. He's also not working as a comedian anymore. Not due to me.
But did he ever apologise?
Why would he apologise?
Calling you fat. I mean, it's hardly the greatest come on line though.
No. People like that don't apologise. Yeah. No one has ever come up to me and come out of their way to be mean to me and then apologise after. Those people don't apologise. Don't apologise, sorry. And I don't need to hear them apologise. It's grand.
Yeah. And did the equally the person who said to you, that was it a lecturer that women don't like to hear women's voices on radio?
Oh, but he says it to everyone. Yeah. And that's like a common trope. That's being taught in schools.
That it's not sexism, it's just the truth.
Yeah, exactly. But like that, I think that study comes from like 1940s or something like that. Something ridiculous.
Or the Dark Ages even.
Yeah. So it's not a real thing. But like a lot of people I know that have been to college to study radio have been told that.
And
I think it's damaging.
Yeah.
Because I then wanted to be a producer and didn't want to be a DJ and didn't really pursue it.
Yeah.
That much.
How did you feel when you first became a full-time comedian?
Poor.
Yeah. Or how did you feel then when you did your first 10-minute stand-up? That was about your granny drinking her own bath water. Was that true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so how did I feel when I did my first gig? I loved it.
Was that autobiographical?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't bath water now. It was hot tub water. You need
What's
to be...
the difference?
Luxury, the Celtic Tiger. That's
all
the
right.
Difference.
Sorry.
How
did Granny feel about that?
Oh, she's grand about it. Do you know what I mean?
So tub water is not bath water.
Hot tub water is different to bathtub water.
How is it different? I'm completely.
It's like champagne and Chardonnay. One's fizzy, one's not.
But is it not something you actually wash your body in a tub?
Yes, it is.
And why would she be drinking that?
Because she was drunk.
Okay.
That's why.
And how did she feel when she heard you doing it?
She wasn't in the room, so she didn't hear it. And she's grand about that type of stuff. She's the funniest person I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, in fairness, she shouldn't be doing such mad things and I wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And how autobiographical, like say the, what was it, the Nowhere Fast. How autobiographical was that?
That wasn't that much autobiographical because there's lots of rewrites. And, the more you rewrite, the further it is away from what you were writing about before. So, like, when I started it, there was definitely a few characters based on, like, a few friends. And then, you know, you have to rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and then they just become their own characters. So the stuff you saw on the TV... wasn't autobiographical by that point.
Is it true you said that you found it difficult to give good lines, funny lines to men?
Is it true?
Yeah, I mean, is that, did you find it difficult to give funny lines to men?
Just because I was so in love with the other characters.
Yeah.
And like, the characters in Nowhere Fast, the men were just romantic interests for the women.
Yeah.
They weren't their own characters. Which is sad, but it's a big reality for a lot of women. You know, women play girlfriend. If you watch comedy sketch shows, it's always wives. You know, it's always like a woman plays a wife of someone. They're never really a protagonist.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it for revenge or anything like that because that's not a good way to live your life. I just wrote lines because I thought characters were funny.
What's your life like in London?
Grand.
Yeah.
It's not like the rent is cheaper than Dublin.
Yeah. Well, so, that goes for a lot of places, doesn't it?
I know. Yeah. It's grand. I just like, I do writing most of the time. Like, that's my main job there. And I do a bit of stand-up. And, I mean, you know, there's no difference. I go to Marks and Spencer's at, like, 5 o'clock and see if they got the yellow stickers.
What's the yellow stickers?
Where you get, like, reduced. Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
Were you joking about being poor?
Generally, yeah. No, I'm poor. I'm poor now. I was poor back when I was younger. I shouldn't be trusted with money at all.
So I thought you'd have a few quid, if not under the mattress, but it's certain maybe in the bank.
Yeah, I know. No, I think a big, not a lie, because it's not like anyone's lying. A misconception, I think people have about people that work in the media industry in Ireland is that there's money in it.
Yeah.
There's no money in it.
What's the biggest misconception people have about Alison Spittle?
I'm not sure. You'll have to give me a conception.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I'll have to deny something. Maybe, I don't know.
Have you lost? I mean, you suffered two pretty horrific break-ins. I mean,
oh yeah.
Was it true that when the guy was asking you for your car, steal your car with your car keys?
Yeah.
You were doing kind of a routine about when you were...
I do routines about all traumatic stuff that's happened to me.
But did you do the routine as it was actually happening to you?
Do you mean... So what happened was, in the space of about a month, I managed to walk in on two separate people robbing my house. One had a knife and threatened me and took my purse. That was the first time. And then the second time, thank God, it was just two lads with crowbars, but they didn't threaten me.
Crowbars are fine.
Well, they were like bears. They were more afraid of me than I was of them. They just wanted to get out, you know, which is a nicer robbing. When you get robbed a lot, you can do your little charts. Do you know what I mean? And of that, they were the more polite robbers I've had.
But you suffered severe anxiety as anyone would.
Yeah,
from that.
Yeah, of course. I didn't feel safe in my own house. Didn't feel safe, and then I got.
Is that why you moved to London, or did it happen in London?
No, I moved to London because I didn't get a second series in Nowhere Fast.
Yeah.
And because there's no other work for me here.
And did you overcome the trauma of what happened?
I thought you were going to say of not getting a second series. I was like, well, yes.
Did you overcome the trauma of not getting a second series? But did you overcome the terrible trauma of being robbed twice like that? By using it as material?
I thought I did, but then I remember doing Edinburgh and you're doing a show a day. I used to feel bad at the end of my shows and I was like, why am I feeling bad? And it's just because I'm reliving trauma for a comedic end or whatever. But it was still like, you know, you're still reciting a horrible thing to happen to you. And that was a good show, but it's made me think twice about doing traumatic things for material because I thought it was therapeutic, but...
Was it?
No, it wasn't. I had to, you see, the problem with me
just
was...
Just picking out a psychic scab, was it?
Oh, well, I tried to like scrimp money on therapy by doing stand-up comedy about my traumas when I should have just paid a therapist. Like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you paid a therapist?
I have, yeah.
And how's that going?
Grand. Now I can't afford one, so I'm not going to them for a little while.
And what did you learn during your therapy?
There's nothing to learn. Have you been to therapy?
I couldn't possibly answer that. Yeah,
why of course. Not?
I'm joking. Yes.
So, what do you learn from therapy? Genuinely, I'm trying to.
But just say you were lying on the couch with Sigmund Freud. What would you want to know about yourself?
What would I want to know about myself? How not to be nervous all the time. Like,
are you nervous now?
Not now, but walking so is that home all the time, at night then? And stuff.
Right. Okay.
Do you know, like being on my own or like. Being in scary situations, it'll be nice to not feel as nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what can you do to feel less nervous?
I don't know. That's for a therapist. I'll have to put more money into that.
Okay, but and do, look.
If I knew that, like you
do
know,
do you live on your own in London, or is there? Like, tell me about your romantic life. Can I ask that?
You can. I got a boyfriend. I live with him. He's lovely. And I live with him and he's great.
Yeah.
And if I'm coming home late at night, he'll get out of the house and walk me home. So he's a gentleman.
Is he a comedian as well?
He wrote Nowhere Fast with me. He did stand-up comedy before. And so he's a writer.
So are you constantly racking his head whether such and such a line is funny or waking him up to say this?
He's just so good at like He'll help me out with, he'll read over my scripts and stuff, and we just bust each other up laughing all the time.
What do you bust each other up laughing over?
Oh, horrible stuff.
Like what?
Give me trauma.
What about his trauma? Does he have any trauma to...
I don't know. It's not for me to tell news talk. But we'll just... He's just a funny man.
How did you meet?
We met, he was at the tail end of doing stand-up and I was kind of starting. And this fella introduced us in the Workmen's and we were mates and stuff and did podcasts together. So it's a very millennial courtship.
And did he woo you by trying to be funnier than you? Is that how it works?
You see,
like two gunslingers, you know?
No,
he laughed you into bed before you know it.
No. Yeah. I think what I liked about him is that we both liked the TV show Pointless.
Yeah.
Which is like a quiz show. I loved that very much. In regards to like competition with comedy and stuff, there, it's more of like a complimentary thing rather than a competition. You know, I think like the best type of comedy is when people work together,
yeah,
and stuff. You know, makes it nicer.
And what was the thing you said about Hozier? Why can't you know the why can't all men be like Hozier?
He was just a cipher for my feelings.
Is your boyfriend like Hozier?
Yeah, every good man's like Hozier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The article was about me getting like abused on the street and stuff by people. So I just pretended. I presumed that Hozier wouldn't do that. So I was doing it as a comic kind of tool to try and encourage people not to be mean.
I'm still trying to get my head around this. People, maybe I just live in a parallel universe sometimes.
You're not a woman.
So people would be actually saying abusive names about you on the street as you walk along.
They used to, and that's before, like, I think I wrote that article maybe about 5 years ago.
But
maybe
it's
more.
And has it changed dramatically in the last 5 years?
Well, I've moved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it has. It has changed.
But
I
5 years
think
ago, you were being
confident.
Called names walking down the street.
Yeah. Yeah, because I guess I used to wear, like, mad stuff, you know. I remember I was on a train going to posh place, it was like Fox Rock or something like that. Had to do a gig there, and these lads put like chewing gum in my hair and called me a fat bitch and stuff. Mad stuff, like, just, you know, I think,
but they're just pricks,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly, yeah. It's not like,
I mean, I'd love to see the way they were brought off if they did that.
Yeah. So it's just like,
You know, it's not about Fox Rock, it's about them just being,
oh,
know,
yeah,
idiots.
I'm not saying they're from Fox Rock either. I'm just, the situation, I'm not painting all of Fox Rock with that thing. But I just like to be happy and dress the way I like and do what I want, because that kind of annoys them more.
Yeah.
You know, same with like people on Twitter or whatever. It's like, just live your life and don't care about what those people think. If it annoys them, it annoys them. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
That's an issue with them.
Absolutely. And when did you first have, when did that first emerge, that kind of sense of screw you?
Since I was about 13, I'd say. I don't know. I was mad into the Smiths and stuff when I was a teenager. Yeah. And
you're kind of being an outsider.
Yeah. And I lived in this council estate in a village, and like the only thing I had in common
was Morrissey.
No, with my friends was smoking. Just used to go and smoke Benson and Hedges and chat. And like,
what would you chat about?
We'd play blackjack, and we would chat about there was a fella in our estate that used to tape Top of the Pops. And
on a VHS,
on a VHS tape, yeah. And T.G. Kahar's Cold, what's it, Cold Here or something like that? Some sort of like country music show. And once Morrissey brought, and now I'm not a fan of him anymore, but like he brought out a single, and I used to play that all the time. And they used to go, ah, shut up with that. And it was good crack. I don't know, like, you just talk about stuff like that teenagers do. So I was an outsider, but I was welcomed everywhere,
yeah.
Yeah.
And was it a village you grew up in?
Yeah, a very small village, Ballymore. It's a great village.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you said once that, I don't know if this is a funny thing or that it was, it was great to grow up in the village because You could never leave.
Like,
you were stuck there.
Because I couldn't drive. Yeah.
No, I think because you were just stuck with all your friends and you were stuck in a village.
Was that about Nora Fast or was that like, I think maybe writing Nowhere Fast and thinking about my village was like being friends with people that didn't have your common interests because they were there through chance, through geography,
yeah.
rather than like, you know, you're going to be my mate because you like Morrissey too. It was going to be like, you're going to be my mate because you live within a mile radius.
Have you gone off Morrissey because he's a bit of a racist so-and-so these days?
Yeah, and like also like, I don't know, and even before that, I think I just got a bit, I cheered up a bit, do you know? I think I was listening to the first album of The Smiths and I was having a shower and I was like, I don't need to listen to a song about child abuse today. Do you know?
Yeah.
Do you know? I can't start off my day this way. So I'm very into R&B now.
I'm sure there is. And if there is that you? Is it Midlands humour? Is that how you describe it?
I would. I love the Midlands. I think Westmead and my village is my muse because I wrote a play about like rural life and I just really enjoy the politics and the fake kind of policing that we all do of each other in a village. I mean, I've gossiped.
Tell me about the fake policing.
Well, just, you know, that type of like bit of gossip, you know. Kind of like maybe someone's got a new car and we all comment on it.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Do you have a new car?
I don't drive. Yeah. And I can't afford a new car. It's the theme.
But are you not a big shot when you go home to Ballymore?
No. I go to the pub, Rooney's, and because...
But when you walk into it, oh, it's herself. It's Alison off the TV.
But they would even if I wasn't on TV. You see, that's the good thing about a small village.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like... I haven't achieved.
But so you'd be, even if you weren't well known, you'd still look like someone who's well known.
Well, you're always well known in a village. Like, there's a fella that I went to school with and he works for Marvel now.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he's no better than the fella who works in the mechanics or anything like that. It's all nice.
So when you walk into the pub at Christmas, is boyfriend you had when you were 15 and then there's a boyfriend you had when you were 18?
I never had boyfriends.
Your whole life is dotted around the pub.
Yeah, I was very lucky. In regards to like...
not having boyfriends.
Yeah, in my village, yeah.
Would you deliberately date outside the county just so you would never have that experience when you're older?
I was a big frigid. I just never dated, do you know? I was a massive frigid. Saint Frigid, that's what I was. Yeah, I just wasn't really into that. I think it was like residual Catholicism as well, you know?
Is that because people slagged you as being Protestant when you weren't? Or
what, that I had to go uber Catholic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sound like Edna O'Brien of Ballymore.
Do I?
The country girl.
Oh.
You know that line, was it, pass me the butter? Lady Divine, won't you pass me some wine? Pass me the butter, you bald-headed scutter.
Ah, nice. That's a great line.
Well, where is the tour?
So the tour is happening. It's called Alison Spittle, Mother of God, and it talks a lot about Ballymore. Kind of about how I didn't get the part of Mary in the school nativity play and how not to hold grudges.
So, clearly you have.
Oh, stop.
So where are you playing very briefly?
I'm going to be in Liberty Hall on the 21st of March and that's the big one in Dublin. I'm going to be touring all around Ireland and also I'm doing another tour of Kevin McGahern in May. So
you should do the opening night with a big premiere in Ballymore.
I should, shouldn't I? In yeah. Ballymore Community Centre. Yeah, definitely.
Alison Spittle, thank you so much for coming in and Merry Christmas again.
Merry Christmas.
The VHI Women's Mini Marathon is back on Sunday, June 5th. Take the first step towards the finish line by signing up now at vhiwomensminimarathon.ie.